stretched out my heart as much as you. Tell me all your secrets and I'll tell you most of mine. They say nobody's perfect, well that's really true this time. I don't have the answers, I don't have a plan. All I have is you, so baby help me understand what we do. You can whisper in my ears where we go. Who knows what happens after here? Let's take each other's hand as we jump into the final frontier. Mad about you, baby.
Actor, comedian, writer, and producer Paul Reiser will headline this year's Fairview Hospital 2016 Gala happening this Saturday at 8 o'clock at the Mahawi Performing Arts Center. A seasoned actor, writer, and producer, Paul Reiser, probably best known for the critically acclaimed NBC series Mad About You, which garnered him multiple Emmy, Golden Globe, American Comedy Award, and Screen Actors Guild nominations. Also, of course, he starred in the wonderful film Whiplash, as well as a best-selling author, having written Couplehood, Babyhood, and Familyhood. He'll be headlining the Mahawi this Saturday, 8 o'clock, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Paul Reiser to the roundtable this morning. How are you, sir?
Well, don't let me rush you. Don't let me rush you. You sounded like it's a beautiful introduction. You went through everything. You were very thorough.
I
think everything but my eighth grade play, I think I was not mentioned in there. But yes, thank you for...
Do you remember what the eighth grade play was?
I don't, but I heard I was dynamite.
Yes, yeah.
I think it was Streetcar Named Desire, and I was ambulance driver number two in that.
Did you know, I mean, some of us know very early what we want to do. Did you perhaps know in the eighth grade that you wanted to be in comedy?
You know what? I didn't. I don't think I had a real plan. But I was kind of lucky because just when I was really getting into comedy in the high school and then into college, it's just about the time that the comedy scene that we ultimately came to know, the clubs, was really coming to into fruition. So it was well timed that just when I had an interest, I actually had a place to go. You know, the clubs were sort of the lighthouse. You know, go there, and all will become clear. So I didn't know, but I had an inclination, and I was lucky in timing.
Now your story is fascinating because, as you say, you were
fascinating guy.
You are a fascinating guy. So you started out, you were doing stand up, and then comes the film Diner. Now does that any way derail, or does that only help what you ultimately wanted to do?
That's an interesting question. Well, it certainly only helped. I mean, it opened all sorts of doors, and that was, for a first job, that was an unbelievable, nice thing to walk into. And it opened a lot of doors and opened the way to start doing some TV. But it's interesting because I only got back into doing stand-up a few years ago. And in fact, when Mad About You, which was certainly, a major thing in my career, in my life, but it was so time-consuming and all-consuming that I just didn't have the anything left to go out and do stand-up. So in that way, it put stand-up in the back burner. It certainly helped, and it was a wonderful, wonderful thing. But then it took a bunch of years for me to realize that you got to actually do it. If you want to get out, I always had it in my mind that I was going to get back out and do stand-up again. So it took a while for me to get off the couch and go down and it was exactly the same journey as it was when I was 18 and I started in college. You just got to go up and throw some jokes on there and start swimming. And it's been great. So this show on Saturday is going to be fun because it's for a great cause and it's a beautiful, beautiful spot on the earth. That's my criteria now. Are they good people and is it pretty there? I don't want to go somewhere where nasty and ugly are the rule. So I'm thinking, Great Barrington, and for a hospital, we're good.
Yeah, it's a good...
I don't know if I answered your question, but somewhere in there I must have.
I think you have. It's a lovely quinella to have those two things. Now, what I find interesting here again is that, so you, in that idea of coming back to comedy, and as you say, you came back, but is there a point where it all kind of rushes back to you and say, oh, okay, this was the timing, this is what worked, I got this?
Well, it took a while. When I came back into doing stand-up a few years ago, the muscles were definitely rusty. And You know, and I would say it's like a ball player. Guy has, you know, he's a great basketball player, but he hasn't played in 7 years. Those muscles are not firing. You still know what to do, but you can't quite tell the muscles to do it. So here, you know, it's all in the brain, but it took a while. And then I would say a good year before I felt comfortable enough to go out and actually perform and, you know, have the nerve to ask people to buy a ticket. So it did take a while, but I will say the thing that came back immediately was the joy of it. As soon as I went on, I went, oh, yeah, this is fun, and it's so much more fun than doing a TV show or a movie, for me anyway. It's, you know, it's just immediate. When you're in a room full of people and they're laughing, and, you know, there's an interplay that you don't get to have anywhere else.
Were there times when you were doing the show, and I know, as you say, you were very busy, you were doing all of this stuff, and everything was happening, and it was great, but did you miss it? Was there a point where you said, oh, I really miss going out and feeling that crowd there every night?
You know, I don't think I was aware of it at the time, because I was enjoying, you know, what I was doing, so I wasn't really focused on what I wasn't doing. I wasn't missing it, but it was always in my, you know, it was on my to-do list. You know, as soon as I get a chance, I'm going to get back and get back on stage. And then I was really kind of content for after Mad About You for a bunch of years. I was writing shows and doing things out of, you know, working from home, and wasn't missing it. And then one day I just did some benefit and I went on stage. I was, you know, I wasn't a real show. I was just doing a couple of minutes, but it was a great audience. And suddenly it all came back. I went, oh, what am I, crazy? Why aren't I doing this? And I, you know, sometimes you just need a, you know, a little kick in the pants to get going. And it was a nice reminder. So once I got back up and did it, I realized how much I had in fact been missing it.
You had not one, but two successful television comedies. One certainly more successful than the other, but you started with My Two Dads, and that show at the time was a successful NBC program, correct? And was your entry into sitcoms?
Yeah, it was. it was a good way for me to learn what I liked doing and what I wanted to do, you know, what kind of show I'd want to do. And so when that was over, it kind of gave me the focus of what became Mad About You, and that you know, I knew I wanted to do an adult show that was more my sensibilities. And so even that was very informative, just doing a show that may not have been to my taste, but it helped me focus on what my tastes were. So, you know, when I was invited to come create a show for myself, I said, well, if I, you know, at the time I was newly married, I thought, well, I'd kind of, this is what interests me, you know, the relationship stuff. And that's what my stand-up was all about. And I said, well, that's the kind of stuff I like to write about. And that's the kind of stuff I'd like to see. So that was the starting point. And then, you know, wrote a script and then met Helen Hunt and said, well, this seems like this is going to work. And so a lot of things have to fall in place for something to last and work. And luckily they did.
You know, that show started in 1992, which was weirdly the same year that I was married. So my wife and I look back so fondly on that show as a program that we watched together in the beginning years of our marriage. And you were dealing with all of the stuff that we were dealing with, and obviously in a comedic mm-hmm. venue. And I'm sure you hear this a lot, but it was really at the time just a lovely thing to have for people. Not that you had to be newly married, but certainly that explored the ups and downs, yeah. And mostly ups of relationships.
Yeah, you know, it's the same comedy. A lot of comedy is, people just want to know that they're not the only ones going through this, you know.
Yeah.
So when someone goes up on stand up, you know, and if I talk about, you know, marriage or getting older or my kids or whatever, and people go, oh, they're laughing, not just because they find it funny. They're laughing, go, oh man, I'm glad he said that, because I was thinking the exact same thing. Or that's you know, there's something very comforting, and it's comforting for me too to be on stage to have other people laugh, because I get the same reward of going, oh, okay, it's not just me. These nice people are going through this too. But yeah, there's all, you know, Mad About You had a particular thing. It certainly resonated deeper with, as you say, people who were going through it at the time, and I still hear from them. That's the nice thing when doing stand-up, and I get to meet you know, meet the crowds. And invariably, any time I go, somebody will come over afterwards and remind me of an episode that really resonated with them. Either it made them laugh, or it really hit home, or it moved them, or it gave them some sort of comfort. And it's really nice to know that you can do something that has that kind of longevity and resonance. You know, there was substance to it. We were really proud of the show. It was funny, and it was a lot of times very silly, but there was something. But there was always something at the core of it, which was, you know, I think what people responded to, which was, wow, these two people are really working at this, and it ain't always easy, and it ain't always fun, but they're working at it, and that's all you can do.
Well, I was watching the show recently, and I was just reminded by how incredible your guest stars were. I mean, you had Mel Brooks and Carol Burnett,
we had our bucket list.
Yeah.
It was crazy, and we used to pinch ourselves, and we would, you know, Helen Hunt and I would look at each other. There was one scene I remember we were doing. Carol Burnett and Carol O'Connor were playing our parents, and we were doing a scene in a very cramped RV that they were going to go. The parents were going to go cross country, and they wanted to show off, and they were showing off how beautiful the living area. Well, it was this tiny table, so we were crowded into this tiny table, and we just looked at each other and said, do you realize what we're doing? I mean, these are the people we grew up watching. This is where we learned comedy from, and we're getting to play with them. And it was just, we had Jerry Lewis, we had Sid Caesar, we had Carl Reiner, we had all these people that were hugely influential, and we were fans of. So it was a great opportunity. It was a great compliment too that, you know, these people felt had high enough regard for what we were doing to come play with us. You know, and then we also just, you know, even the non-comedy people, we had people that, you know, Lyle Lovett and Garth Brooks did a cameo. We had Yoko Ono did an episode. Like, well, this is crazy. You know, people that you don't really anticipate. So we were really, we had an embarrassment of riches in terms of who came on to play with us.
You know, you mentioned Carl Reiner, but not only did you have Carl Reiner on, and this is when I just fell madly in love with the show, you had Carl Reiner on as Alan Brady.
Yes, that was kind of, well, there was always this sort of DNA that we shared with the Dick Van Dyke Show because we all grew up on it, and it really was, you know, it was a newly married couple. It didn't seem that way when we watched it as kids. They were grown-ups, but now when you're in your 30s, you realize, oh, we're the maybe even older than Rob and Laura were on Dick Van Dyke Show. They were just newlyweds too, sort of. They had a kid, but yeah, that was an inspired idea that one of our writers, head writer, had at the time was, why don't we make it Alan Brady? And so we not only shared the content of our show was about, but we literally were then linked that this fictitious guy, it was kind of a mind, really, it was a mind stopper. It was like, wait, this guy who didn't really exist, but we're on our show, we're pretending as if he really existed in this parallel universe. Like, it's Alan Brady. It's like, it was an inspired idea.
Paul Reiser is our guest. He's going to be headlining the Fairview Hospital 2016 Gala this Saturday at 8:00 at the Mahawy Performing Arts Center in Great Barrington, Massachusetts. And you can find out more information by going to mahawy.org, mahawy.org. Has the content changed much in the comedy? Has what you talk about, is that radically different, or are you still staying pretty close to home?
Well, the content has changed, but it's, you know, I still have the same point of view, and but you can't help but change, you know, when you're who you are at 30 and who you are in your 50s and is very different. So, you know, jokes about being newly married are replaced with 28 years into it. It's still the same subject. It's still the same fascination, but you're talking from a different point in life. And what's been nice is, you know, the audience is, have grown, we've all grown together. So whatever was happening, if we were going through the same thing back then, we're still going through the same things now. They're new, but we're sharing them. And, I always tell people, you know, they say, I'm mad about you. You seem like that was you. And I said, well, that was because I was decided I should create the character as much like myself as possible, so I wouldn't have to act too hard. So it was ultimately laziness that was. But so I would say, if you're so mad about you, you're not going to come to my comedy show and say, that guy's not at all what I was expecting. No, it's very much. It's the same guy, just with some miles on the belt, under the belt.
Now, so you don't think, oh, you know, I would like to get more political, or I'd like to look at this, I look at that. You still stick with the topics that you've always
said. Yeah, you know, I think people do what they do. You know, I think there are guys who do political humor brilliantly, and I don't. It doesn't mean I don't care about it, but it's just it's not the world I work in. And certain things, you know, and as a comedian, you learn that over time. You go, well, this feels like me. This one feels like not me. And you start to pick that out pretty early, what you can do and what you can't. Some things it's better to leave to those who can do it better.
Tell us a little bit about how you came to the film Whiplash, which, of course, was an Academy Award-winning film, a lovely, lovely film, and your performance in it was lovely.
Thank you. Yeah, that was a pretty straightforward. I got a call. A director wanted to meet me, and I read the script, and I thought it was fantastic, and it was this beautiful little movie that was really a two-hander, and I was sort of the third hand. You know, I played, you know, for those who haven't seen it, it's a movie about a 20-year-old kid who's falling under the sway of a really abusive teacher, and I play Miles Tell. I play the kid's father, and he wrote the writer director was 26 when he wrote this, but it was beautifully written and very economically written. And there's something very, again, relatable. When as a parent, you learn, you know, you put all your lifeblood into guiding and steering your children towards positive things. But there is a point when you realize that you can't really insulate them. You can't baby-proof the world. You know that your kid's going to very possibly make some bad decisions, and there's only so much you can do. And that was what was so beautifully written about it. It's like, oh, and people again, you know, they see that movie. Oh, I get it. You know, the pain that this guy was going through was like a pain that a lot of parents go through at one point or another.
Because you only want the best for your child, and yet you got to go through the ups and downs with them.
Yeah, and I could think of all the things that I did that aggravated my family, and my parents, you know, not least of which was becoming a comedian. So at a certain point, you say, well, that's part of the life is, you know, the life process, the life journey is you got to find your path, and sometimes it's going to be different than what your parents had in mind for you. Sometimes it's great, and sometimes it's not. You know, it was a very compelling story in Whiplash, and this kid, I think, ultimately did kind of land on his feet, but it was a very painful journey to watch. It's a fantastic, fantastic film. I always, you know, tell people, to me, part of what was so exceptional about that movie is it's so small. It's really two people, and it's not special effects, and it's not, you know, it's not anything outlandish. It's just so emotionally rich, and it's good for filmmakers to be reminded once in a while that you can make a fantastically dramatic, exciting film on a small scale.
The thing I loved about your character too was that this was a parent who. So often parents are portrayed as doofuses and they're getting in the way of the child or they're used as a foil in some way. But this was obviously a parent who cared very deeply about his child. They went to movies together. He understood when relationships were coming on and moved away or moved out of the way and just sort of got everything right or as right as you can get it.
As right as you can get it. That's the point. Yeah, and it wasn't, you know, he was a single parent, very well intended, and part of what the kid's vulnerability was that, gee, Dad didn't really make it on his own, and, you know, Dad didn't really make a big success of himself. He was a writer, an aspiring writer, father, who became a high school English teacher. So in the back of the kid's mind was like, well, I'm not going to settle for mediocrity. I'm going to reach for the stars, which then put him in touch with the wrong guy when he's this teacher who was, you know, really emotionally manipulative and abusive. So part of, even in this case, the father was, you know, somebody who certainly done, you know, lived a decent life, but the kid saw him in him a shadow of what he didn't want to become. And that's, you know, that's true too. You know, I see with my own kids, you know, they look at us and here's what we like about our parents. Here's what we want to do differently. But that's, you know, as it's always been.
Do you look back now? I mean, are you happy with the schedule and the work that you're doing, or do you think to yourself, oh, it'd be nice to focus mostly on stand-up. It'd be nice to focus mostly on film. Maybe it would be nice to go back to a series.
That's funny you say that, because there's never. I don't know anybody in this world or in this line of work, anyway, who has a real plan. It's kind of, I think about a year ago, I was saying, I just want to do stand up, and I'm just going to go out, and some are bigger venues, some are smaller, but it's just fun and it's joyful. And then something comes up, and the show comes up, and I'm doing this show called Red Oaks on Amazon. It's like, well, I didn't expect that. And it's like, okay, well, there's 3 months of your life doing that. And certain things, you got to make decisions along the way. So I try to make little plans for myself, but you have to be flexible. And it's been fun. It's been a nice run. The last couple of years have been busy. I'm getting to do stand-up, and I'm getting to do some nice movie roles and working on a couple of nice TV projects. So, I kind of like the balance. But to me, as I say, the most fun is coming out and, doing what I'm going to do Saturday, just come out and tell jokes, and hopefully people will come down and have a good time.
It's Paul Reiser at the Mahawi this Saturday, 8 o'clock. It's a fundraiser for the Fairview Hospital, their 2016 gala. You can find out more information by going to mahawi.org, mahawi.org. Paul Reiser, a great pleasure to have you on the program. I've been a big fan of your work, and I thank you very much for taking the time out. We look forward to having the region.
Thank you.
Great
pleasure. Look forward to seeing you down there.
Thank you very much. Again, Paul Reiser will be at the Fairview Hospital gala at the Mahawi Theater this Saturday, 8 o'clock, mahawi.org. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.